Good morning, everybody. We are here with Sean. And Sean is currently writing a book, a middle grade novel. But before that, she has gone through a journey of her career path. So you have been juggling, you were an art director, correct?
Yeah.
And then you helped your husband with his business, which is now your joint business, which is a golf pro shop. In the midst of all that, you've been raising two children, buying a home, selling a home, buying another home, and going through a pandemic with your business, and then into your career as a novelist. Is that what we would call it?
That's what we're aiming for, yes.
So I think this is interesting because we can totally cut this out, but Sean is turning 50 at the end of the year. And she looks great, and she's just been through a lot, and I admire her. She and I had met on the school grounds. Our kids were in the same class together, and she was just one of those moms that I was like.
She was a cool mom?
Yeah, I was like, I bet you drink. I was like, we can be friends.
Is it that obvious?
You swear, so we can be friends. So, Sean, I don't know if you want to start with the beginning or what led you to starting a middle grade novel and just sharing your journey with us. Going through a career change alone is scary, and then
it is crazy. I think now it's a little bit different. Now, as you said earlier, I'm turning 50 this year, so I'm from maybe a slightly different generation when you still sort of, you know, held down one kind of career and maybe you took a turn, but largely not. So yes, as you said, I was in the art industry for probably most of my career. So everything from like starting to work at an art gallery when I was 18, and I did my master's of museum studies at University of Toronto. So, and then I worked at museums and galleries and an auction house. And that took me all the way through my 20s and 30s. And I ended up moving here to Vancouver when I met my partner. And when I was here, again, I was still in the arts. I worked at the Vancouver Art Gallery. And on the side, I started my own art appraisal business.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was really fun. Like, I love art and antiques and, like, you know, cultural objects in general. And it was really great to be part of that in all aspects of my life. So it was good. But I've always been writing on the side as well. So, like, just little projects here and there. And I knew I wanted to write a book one day, but the timing had to be right. And I didn't really know what that looked like. I didn't know what that definition was. I was just sort of waiting for the moment to strike me.
Yeah.
But it took many years of, like, it wasn't like a moment that struck. It was more like a creeping feeling of like, it's time, stop doing something else. It's time. But like LJ said, kids, business, my husband has a golf course management business. So we were basically two self-employed people, which is, you know, that's a lot of risk with young kids. So there wasn't really a great time to, like, be able to sit down and dedicate a lot of time to trying to write a book. But yeah, so there was a bunch of factors that sort of converged in my early 40s. Just like disillusionment with the art market, which has its own set of, you know, bullshit, shall I say. And my dad was very ill and passing away. And I just thought, wow, you know, like, I'm coming up onto 50 in a few years. Like, that's half my life. So what do I want to do? What do I really want to do for the rest of the time that I have? So at that time, I was already doing the writing for my husband's business. I was doing his website and I was doing his RFPs with him and his policy and helping him write things. So I said, how about you? I actually put together like a full-on proposal. And I want to be very professional about it, even though we're married and everything. I was just like, let's be super professional. And I wrote him a little proposal and I said, how about I be your communications manager? You pay me for the things I've been doing anyway. And put it before your senior managers, like, just put it out there because it must be a bit weird working for a husband and wife team. Not that they were probably going to say, no, I don't think this is a good idea, but
Yeah,
maybe.
you're fired.
I don't
Just
know.
kidding.
Yeah, right. They could have.
This
I didn't know.
nepotism in
Yes,
the
exactly, right?
kidding.
Totally. So yeah, and so I came on and it was a bumpy road. I'd say the first year was pretty difficult. It was pretty difficult, I think, for him because it was his gig that he'd been doing solely on his own for a decade. And then here I come in with all my ideas and my opinions, and I didn't know golf at all, but I knew how to write, I knew how to communicate, and I knew, how to make language and so you're speaking to customers or you're speaking to staff, and there was a lot of policy that wasn't yet put in place. And as LJ knows, I'm a very
Yes.
I like structure. I like clear flow of directions and understanding. So my husband, I'm sorry about the dog. Yeah. My
Oh,
husband,
I can't even hear it.
oh
We just hear
gosh. Oh,
construction
really?
here. So
Oh,
we're
okay,
good.
perfect. My husband is very big ideas person, and he's very go with the flow. And I am like, I need a plan and I need an end goal and I need steps on how to get there. So after a little bit of I'm sorry, I just have to make the dog be quiet.
For a while. What?
So it was a little bit of a up and down there for a while, but it's totally great now because we offer two completely ends, different ends of how to run a business, and it sort of converged well. It took a few steps to get there. So that sort of let me enter the writing world in a professional capacity. And then I could have a little bit of time to write for passion on the side. So yeah, I ended up doing the writer's studio at Simon Fraser University, which is a fantastic 1-year program, very focused. And you learn from a bunch of mentors. And I was paired with this fabulous woman, Leanne Dunick, who I love. She's an experimental poet and novelist, and she's also half Asian, which is pretty cool. And a lot of my writing is deals or addresses or talks about that aspect of myself. So yeah, and out of that program I came out with lots of material. I came out with an amazing group of women to write with. And one thing I love about your business model here is it's very community centered and very like coming together, sharing of information, supporting each other. And that's totally what I have with my writing group. And it is essential, like everything from people you talking you off the cliff of like, yes, you can do this, don't get down, to like, providing you with hard feedback, like, this isn't working. This page or this concept, this idea that you've got down in your rough draft, it's not hitting. So it's great to have those people who can lift you up, but also like dial you into reality. So now that's where I'm at. I'm working with my husband, doing communications and marketing for him, and then writing a middle grade novel, which is like ages 8 to 13, let's say. And doing all sorts of that, and it's fun.
I think one. I love middle grade novels.
My daughter does.
Oh, good.
She reads all the time. She brings a book with her when we go to a restaurant, like anywhere we
Oh.
go, she has her like novels with her and her series with her and stuff. Yeah.
Love
But
it. before meeting you or watching that one show, shoot, I can't remember what it's called, but one with Hilary Duff in it.
Anyway, which one you're talking about.
TV yeah. show or movie?
It was a series. It was a
series.
Is it the new one? Like How I Met Your...
No, oh. It was one where right. publishers... Oh my gosh.
Younger.
Younger.
That's yeah. it.
I knew nothing about book writing and the publishing world. And I think, because when did you officially start this process of book writing? I want to say 2020, you started talking to us about it.
Yeah, I think I started it in 2018, but I just kept it like a secret. I don't know why, like who cares? But like for some reason I cared that I didn't want people. Oh, I guess what it was is I didn't want to be like a stereotype. Oh, like a middle-aged woman writing a book. Like, ooh, it's so novel. But so that was a stupid ego issue that I had. But yeah, I started in 2018 and it's I'm still working on it here 5 years later.
I feel like that's how it goes.
Yeah, so. It's just so interesting to see the process because I feel like since 2020, we talk about it quite a bit, your process, right? And just like at the time, you had no idea how it ended, right? Where now I think you're going through your first edit or I don't know. I don't know.
So it took me, I wrote the first 80 pages like 6 times over.
Wow.
But I could never finish it for whatever reason. It's because I'm a bit of a perfectionist. So I get to a certain point and then I'm like, oh, no, that has to change. So then I go back and start all over again, which is, you know, sort of self-defeating in a way because then you never get to the end. Mm-hmm. So I finally forced myself to finish a full draft. And in the writing world, we say, like, are you a pantster or are you a plotter? And so a pantster is someone who just, like, sits down, doesn't really know where they're going, is just, like, types to see what happens. And then a plotter is somebody who, like, clearly knows the arc of their story and, like, has certain points they want to hit and like, writes to that frame. But I started off being a pantster because I really didn't know. I'm just like, da-da-da, I want to talk about this. This interests me. And then, so now that I have like the first full version, I'm like halfway through my first full second, right? And now I can put in the plotting part. So it's, and then, yeah, we'll see. So I'm aiming to finish my first full second draft by the end of the summer. And then hopefully I'll have a third full draft by the end of the year, but we'll see.
How many drafts does it take? To write a yeah. like
and what happens after that
for
what sure. happens when you have the final draft that you love, like what happens at that point?
Well I think I was just talking to another middle grade author last week and I said to her, like, how did you know when you were done and ready to submit to a publisher or an agent, which is typically what you would do? And she said, I knew I was done when I could see my characters, like almost like in real life. Mm-hmm. Like if I walked down the street and I saw my character at a cafe, I knew exactly what she was going to do. And I was like, ooh, that is a good bar, like a measuring stick, you know? So that was interesting. I'm not sure what my answer will be, but there's this one First Nations, she's Métis, this one author, Canadian author named Cherie Dimeline, and she's pretty well known. She has some bestsellers. She wrote this young adult sort of like dystopian novel called The Marrow Thieves, and she wrote it in 6 weeks, but then she rewrote it 11 times, and I was like, oh God, okay. So I think, and like I heard J.K. Rowling's rewrote Harry Potter like 20 times or something. So I don't know that there's like a specific answer as to how you know when it's done. I hope, because I've been working on it for such a long time and it is, you know, coming together. It's going to take a lot of fine tuning, but I'm hoping that I'll be done by next year because I set a goal for myself. So within the year that I am 50, so basically the year of 2024, it is my goal to either have an agent or a publisher for it. So, and we'll see what happens. So that's my goal.
Do you think, and I don't know if you even know the answer to this, but do you think your book would have a sequel to it? Or do you think this is one of those one and done? Or how does the mind work for a novel? Yeah.
I feel in my perfect of worlds, I would love for this book to be like a standalone, mm-hmm. because it is sort of set in history. It's set in the year 1988, which is the year that the Canadian government apologized for the internment of Japanese Canadians during the Second World War. So that's sort of like the background of my novel. But I would like to think that this character and her adventures could go on to have more adventures in another book. So we'll see. We'll see. But it's a really fun process, but it's really hard, I have to say.
But it brings you joy.
It does. It's really, it's fun creating a world, actually. And I think that's what I love about reading. And I don't know if you were, either of you were big readers when you were young, but I was a voracious reader. So I was like your daughter. I was that kid who was carrying around books all the time and who would like rather lie in the backyard and read a book than go out and do something. And I just loved getting lost in worlds. So I would like to, you know, be able to do that for somebody else.
Like that.
I know.
Yeah.
So like, turning 50 and doing this, because this isn't, maybe it's more common now for the younger generation, but for, you know, the older generations,
for us,
yeah, to switch careers at any phase after you've already started in life is like, you know, you lose the security of pension, you lose like all these things. But I guess as entrepreneurs, both you and Tom, you already didn't have, right? I was like, how does this work? So
yeah, we don't have, I think that we're too high risk people.
I feel like entrepreneurs have a different viewpoint in like jumping into things and just going for it, right? Mm-hmm. You work on the 9 to 5, you work, yeah, not knowing what tomorrow will be or yeah.
Yeah. And I think that both of us have this perspective that, you know, you really do only live once. Like that's it. Right. And what are you going to do with your time here? There's so many people I know who are unhappy and just grinding it out because bills or whatever societal expectation. And you know, sometimes that's what's required. Absolutely. Like we're grinding it out for years before we decided that we wanted to do something that we wanted. And there's major risk involved. So I think you definitely have to be a personality who can handle the risk, but who can also know, like, should things go, you know, tits up, like you have the resources to be able to scramble back together. So actually, when I first met Tom, we were both gainfully employed in two opposite sides of the country. And when I decided, first of all, he was going to move to Toronto and be with me. So he quit his job. And then like a month later, I'm like, no, I want to move to Vancouver. he already quit, right? So he was like, well, I don't have a job. And I'm like, I want to move to Vancouver. It's so great there. So then I quit and then moved there. And so we were unemployed together for like probably a couple months. And honestly, it was the best time ever. It was so, you know, I mean, obviously we lived on a shoestring budget and I'm like budget lady. So I was like, this is exactly how much we have if we want to go eat out, which was like getting fresh sliced pizza, you know, like we did it. And of course we found jobs and everything, but we just had the best time because we were together after a year of being, you know, like flying back and forth across the country. And we would like go for midnight walks and, you know, it was just awesome. So we had a great time. So coming from that, we knew whatever happened in our life together, because we started with no money and like no employment, we could handle whatever else after that. Mm-hmm. So I think that was also helpful when he's like, I want to start my company and this is what it's going to be like. And I was like, okay. And then I wanted to do my thing. And we knew that we could, we had the resources and the ability to work together with little. So we could manage that bumpy road. Luckily, it's worked out. Yeah.
What is working together like? Because I feel like my husband and I, we definitively know that would never be an option. So, and it sounds like you two get along well, or you found your flow of things. How? And yeah, what is it like? What is it like?
Yeah, like I said, the first year was pretty bumpy. And I'm an opinionated person, so I think that probably doesn't help. I
don't know. Same boat. Yeah. Thing.
I don't know.
You two are actually quite similar in personality, actually. Maybe that's why I'm such good friends with both of you.
Are you a fire sign also?
I have no idea.
I wonder.
But yeah, I mean, we definitely had to do a lot of talking, and we had to do a lot of like, I understand this might, you know, he was always like, you don't know golf. So you don't know that kind of thing. And I was like, I understand that. And I agree. I don't know, but this is how I see it from the outside. So, it was just a lot of like open communication, but it was a lot of humility too. Like, mm-hmm. to have somebody say to me, you know, like, you don't know what you're talking about. Not quite in those words, but similar. Mm-hmm. So you have to trust that I know. And I was like, okay, that's mm-hmm. true. That's true. And then for me to say, I know you see it one way, but I'm telling you that this is how it looks like from this angle. And why don't we just try this and see if it works? Mm-hmm. So it did take some back and forth, and it took trust. And I think for him, it took much longer for him to be comfortable with me being a larger part of moving the company forward, just because it was his for so long. And, you know, he knows golf and he knew all the contacts and everything. And it was hard for somebody to come in who has a bunch of other opinions. But I finally knew, and it took a few years, to be honest, because he would still sometimes say my company, and whatever, okay, you know, that's cool, even though I literally own 50%, but that's so you know, it's when he started to say our company, I was like, oh, okay, he's made, wow. You know, he's made that shift in his subconscious or his conscious.
Yeah.
And one day we were going for a walk, and this was post-pandemic, because the pandemic was crazy, like both of us self-employed during the pandemic. The first 2 months, basically, our business was shut down and all hell broke loose, as we all know. But it was probably 2021, so it's not even that long ago, when he said, we were going for a walk, and he just randomly said out of nowhere, I really value how much you are, what you bring to the company, and you've made it, you know, better and moved us forward. And I was like, wow, okay, we're there, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so communication and humility, because it's hard listening to people
like
tell
those two things.
Yeah,
both those things I'm super working on.
Yeah.
with my husband, like the communication part, that's a bit easier, but the humility, that's in the being humble, that's a different
yeah
thing. Beast for
totally
me.
It is for a lot of people, but LJ, I'd love to sometime hear about how it's going with you and Ellie. So you're now a husband wife business owning team.
I think I am the Tom, though, right?
Oh,
in every
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
Ellie is definitely like a planner, like he likes to know everything, and I'm more of a go with the flow. And I still call it my business.
And have you had that moment where you said, you know what, this is great that you're here, you've really helped out?
We haven't gone
not there yet. Okay. That's fair.
Yeah,
we are like, I shouldn't say that, you know, I know where his skill set lies, and he knows where mine lies, and I am not an R&D, like research and development person.
He loves that, right?
He loves that.
Yeah. Oh,
so
great.
He does all of the reading and this researching and stuff for me for things that we want to do for Delaga in the future. And so
really
we work well together. But I think in controlling like the money part of it is where we fight a lot.
Healthy discourse.
Yeah.
Somebody once said to me, it's healthy discourse. Okay. I'm like, oh, I like that. I'm going to use that.
I like that. That sounds, that's perfect.
Literally up until this morning, the drive here. And, and he's like, let's talk about this later. I'm like, noted. I mean, we're better than we were 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
The way we communicate it. But yeah, communication, I think, is key. And if, you know, I think you and Ben have pretty good communication skills.
When you know
when you're not like,
when I'm not like, he also has a lot of patience and openness because he knows my level of things and how my speed of things.
You two are actually December. I think you guys are the same.
Like, are you December?
December baby.
I am. Yeah.
You are a fire sign. That is
hilarious.
I was like, when you were asking that, I was so like, wait a minute, both of you are exactly the same. Like, both of you were in December.
Yeah. Yay. Yay us.
It's good, though, but it sounds like we each paired with somebody who, you know, matches our skill set in the opposite way, which is like a good combination. Like Tom is super patient. I'm like really impatient. I'm very like high energy and I'm like high energy and I'm like low energy. And I'm like, I love this. And I'm like, I hate this. And he's just like, yeah, that's cool.
That's exactly Ben. That is Ben. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank God. Right. I don't think I'd want to marry somebody like me. It'd be too exhausting.
Oh, I wouldn't be married anymore. I know that for sure. It would just be like this all the time.
Yeah.
Totally.
That is cool. This is and it's just such an interesting journey because, well, I guess writing and art are the same. It's the golf that's it's like different.
Oh, are you in the golf now? Or like, have you gotten more interested or, you know, invested
totally in it? Totally. I do. I mean, I think I could actually be a good golfer if I would actually go out there and practice. But on the one hand, I'm super impatient, so I don't have a lot of time to go. And I also, I'm busy. I don't have a lot of time to go out and practice and even play at all, but I want to. So this year I said, okay, this year I'm going to do it. I'm going to get into it. And I still have yet to make it to the driving range, but I'm going to do it. But the funny thing is, and I was just saying this to my daughter the other day, I don't know why, how it came into conversation. Oh, we were talking about maybe pairing up with people who are similar to you, just sort of what we just talked about. And I said to my daughter, I'm like, when I was younger and like looking for a partner, not looking for a partner, but just like out in the dating world, I was like, I hate golf. Like, yeah. I literally hate it. People who watch golf, it's so boring. It's just like the most boring. And then I said, and here I am married to a golf pro. Right. Like, who is eating crow right now? So
the universe is like, I'll show you.
Right? Totally. And like gainfully employed by this industry. Yeah. And everything. So I don't know why that was really sort of crazy that I said so that. Funny. But I do actually really love golf. I just wish it was like shorter. So like 9 holes max.
Pitch and putt.
Yeah, totally.
I heard the executive course is shorter, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, 12 holes. But I like, they should make a 6-hole course. I would do that. 6 holes and then drinks. Like,
you might want to just start something new perhaps.
Yeah, I think I should.
Adventure.
Yeah, instead of just, you know, start a smaller golf course.
Exactly.
A more manageable one for the ones who don't really want to be out there for that long.
I feel like
or who have like short attention spans.
They go out, they drink. That's the main thing. They drink, I think.
Yeah, for me, it's like having a good time with my friends.
Yeah.
And like being outside and, you know, challenging myself a little bit because that's my personality. I like to do things that are a little bit hard. So, but I don't really have or want to spend, you know, 4 or 5 hours doing 18 holes and being pressured by like quickly pace of play, hurry up. So you don't hold up I want to be more chill about it. So yes, let's find some investors for six holes.
This could be a thing.
Maybe eight.
This is true. This is true. And LJ, you and I have to get out to the driving.
Yes.
I can't get up as early as you though.
So. She was like, "Let's do a nighttime."
No, that would be nice too, though. Yeah,
an evening. And you do have the golf outfits, like
I do. Yeah, well, you know, it's so funny. I think that was part of my, you know, revulsion to the sport at the beginning too. It's like, why does everybody dress this way? And you know, it's, golf fashion has changed so much in the last 10 years. And there's just way more cuter, cooler outfits out there, and for dudes too, right? Much more like flattering cuts and better fabrics with cool patterns, and you know, so different than when I was in the 90s proclaiming my hatred for the sport. So.
And here we are today.
Yeah.
I know, it's so funny. Yeah.
I think one thing we didn't talk about, which is pretty big, I guess, I don't know, it seemed like it took over a lot of your communication for golf, was the fact that your golf managing company also has a golf pro shop.
It does. We have an online store. Yes.
Yeah. And so I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that, or what got that started. Was that something Tom started and then you were like, let me move this forward, or...
Well, it's actually our director of retail, Vanessa. She always wanted to do it. And during the pandemic, we had started it before the pandemic, but we didn't have really enough resources, human resources to do it. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have the cash to put into doing proper marketing and finding expertise for that, for e-commerce, which is a whole other beast, mm-hmm. as you both probably know. Mm-hmm. And but when the pandemic happened, we, like I said, our courses were shut down for the first 6 or 8 weeks, and we had all this inventory. We're like, crap. So while all many other golf courses were open during this time, because it was one of the only things that you were allowed to do, but we sort of missed out on the first 2 months because of the nature of the contracts that we had. So we had all this inventory. We're like, oh my God, we got to get this store up again. So we revived it. And Vanessa largely was the force behind it, really pushing it forward. And Tom was like on board. Like, Tom's like good. Like, one thing that's great about the company is that if you have an idea, and like, Tom will be like all up for you trying anything. And so I think that's a cool thing. It's like, hey, I have this idea. And he'll be like, sure, go for it. Like, run with it, see what happens. And if it, you know, gets legs, then we can talk about the next step. So mm-hmm. I think having like an innovative, like kind of mentality where you're up for creative ideas and new things, that's fun, right? Mm-hmm. So she really moved it forward. And then where I sort of came on was, there's very little diversity in the marketing of golf. So while you go on any golf course, especially here in the, you know, larger city centers, you see all types of people golfing.
Yes.
But when you look at the golf marketing, it's old white dudes, right? Middle-aged white guys. And I was like, for one, like, why isn't the industry like modern in right? And like, look at who is playing golf. It's Asian, it's South mm-hmm. Asian, it's, you know, all sorts of people of color and all sorts of gender and all sorts of age ranges. Why are we always marketing to the 55 plus white guy crowd? So for the caddy shop, we've had some ups and downs trying to find what our voice is, I guess, is what we'd say in the writing world. But, you know, Vanessa and I both run the show. So we're like, well, we're women centered. Like, let's put way more pictures of women playing golf. That's who's playing golf. And who's the gateway to golf? Women, honestly, we're the ones who sign up. Generally speaking, we're the ones who sign up the kids for camps, right? Yeah. During the summer. Looking, you know, we're the ones who do a lot of the driving to different things, to sports and other activities. So why aren't we doing more targeted marketing to women and families? And, you know, that's one thing. And then also just myself being a person of color, half Asian, I never see half Asian people, you know, in marketing anywhere. And even within the population, like where I live, there is a large half Asian population, but where I grew up, there was like none. Mm-hmm. So I'm very interested in seeing diverse peoples on a website for golf, or like being shown in, marketing ads. Like this is who's playing golf. So let's show that.
Yeah. So I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Caddy Shop, everybody. The Caddy
Shop. Caddyshop.com.
I'm like making note. I am going to look this up later.
Excellent. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So. I think I've gone to, I think you were telling me a couple of the golf courses that you manage. And I'm like, oh, I think I've been to that. I've been to.
Yeah.
Can we say?
The city, the municipal. Yeah. Our company has a contract with the city of Vancouver to operate a few of the municipal courses there. And a few in West Vancouver. And then we operate a golf course in Kelowna as well called Shadow Ridge. So yeah, it's fun. There's always something going on. And I think for a personality like mine, where I get bored really easily, I need a lot of different things to do. It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ingenious Tom making a career out of something, creating a business out of something that he loves so much.
I know, right? Like that's a lucky thing.
Yeah. Totally. It's hard, right?
It is hard. Like I said, we didn't really start a big, you know, being successful until probably a few years ago, right? So that's like a long time to be putting in the hard work to see some fruits of your labor. So
it takes,
and we have an amazing team.
Yeah.
And I think the thing, well, you both probably know this as well, is having a really great team is key. Like people who are bought into the company and bought into you as people. And mm-hmm. want to do well. Mm-hmm. So that's been a big part, is having such a fantastic team to help us on our way.
Mm-hmm. I will never actually forget the evening where you were like, we just started to feel really comfortable in our business.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I have so long to go.
I know.
And I was like, wait, you just... But no, it wasn't that long if you think about it. Like, well, you know, I think about it and I'm like, okay, what's a decade goes by so fast.
Oh my
so
god,
so fast, right? So
yeah,
time to practice and
and
change things. Yeah,
so. Yeah, totally. And it's just an always shifting beast too. And I think if you sort of know that in the back of your head, which you know, I think an entrepreneur always does know, is things can change at any time. You don't know when, like at one of the courses we were managing, this was a few years ago on the island, a golf cart shed blew up, right? Wow. So like, okay, so let's manage this one, you know? Like,
and I guess that is up to you to take care of.
Yeah, we did have to manage it. It was,
wow.
I can't remember what the reason was. It was I don't know. I can't remember now why it blew up. It had something to do with somebody had put propane, or some member had, I don't really remember, but the point is weird things happen that you would like never think that you would manage.
Yeah.
Or like once a golf course of ours flooded, and that was a major disaster. Yes. So like you have to be resilient, even if you don't want to be, because you just have weird things that happen that you have to manage. Mm-hmm. So both Tom and I are quite gray because we have had to manage all sorts of things together in our lives and our lives as business owners. But it makes for really good stories around the dinner table. It's all for the stories, right?
They're very optimistic. Very optimistic.
So if you knew what you knew now, maybe 10, 15 years ago, what would you change if you would change anything, and why?
That's a good question. I think I would tell myself to be far more confident. Mm-hmm. If I could take the confidence and the don't give a fuck attitude that I have now and give it to myself 20 years ago, that's what I would do. Because it's just, it, nobody else's opinion matters, really. You know what I mean? Like, you go forward, live your true self, do the things that you want to do, and not worry about what other people think. And for me, that I think was a problem, especially becoming a writer and like calling myself a writer. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I was expecting that I should have to do to prove to myself that I was a writer. I've published articles for like decades and I still couldn't call myself a writer, which was a strange hang up that I had. So I think just to take the confidence that I have now, give it to myself then and say, hey, fake it till you make it, you know, that's what you need to do. So yeah, be confident. Just who cares what anybody else says or thinks, just go move forward.
Yeah. I love that.
That's awesome. And where can people find you? Should we share that?
Yeah.
So I have an author's persona, which is different from myself.
Oh.
Yes. So, I have a website called yukimimcintyre.com, and then you can find me on Instagram at Yukimi Writes. And Yukimi is my middle name. And that's my writing is largely addresses at this point. The space in between cultures and the space in between identities as a mixed race person. And that's where you can find me at Yukimi Writes.
Awesome.
Love that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And that's a wrap on another episode of Rise Podcast by R. Bahai. If you want to be interviewed or know somebody who you think's totally inspiring and you want us to interview them, or just want to drop us a note, please feel free. You can reach us at hello@rbahai.com. That's hello@rbahai.com. Join us next week while we interview Bernadette from Be Yoga Wellness. She has an amazing story of how she got into teaching yoga, being part of the yoga community, and coming from a complete 360 degree, or is it 180 degree, of the corporate world. Don't miss out. We'll see you next Thursday.